Good afternoon, everyone. It is 1:30 p.m., September 9, 2024. This is a work session of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. I'm Randy Christman, joined by fellow decision makers here, Sherry Haugen-Hoffert and Tim Dawson. Although a quorum isn't really an issue because this is not a meeting, it's a work session. And I point that out for a reason, because we have people that don't do business with us all the time, and I suppose some of this terminology is kind of Greek to some people, and we get used to it and just throw it around. So I just wanted to take an opportunity to point out the hearings that we've had for some time. And I know certainly a fair amount of the faces in the audience have been to some of those. That is a hearing, and there we gather evidence. People testify to us, and usually it's the participants in the case and then followed by the public, and we gather information. One thing we do not do because of, you know, open meetings laws and just trying to do the right thing is then go huddle in a little room somewhere and talk it over amongst ourselves. Our discussions need to be in public. And so this is a work session is what we call it. And so this is our opportunity to talk to our staff about the case with questions we might have, ideas. Is there something more that needs to be explored here before we're able to reach a decision? You know, additional information that we want to request, those types of things. Because this has been a long process and that it's a big project covering, what was it, 300 and some miles. And we've had hearings for a year and a half all the way from Wahpeton to Mandan. We won't get through everything today. There's a lot of different things to discuss. I had asked our staff to work a little bit and, you know, kind of work on coming up with topics, you know, rather than going, well, this person testified about this, and then the next work session, that person testified about the same thing, and then we go through the same discussion. We want to kind of stay on some topics. So staff has been working on putting those kinds of things, topic ideas together. So that's how this work session goes. It's not an opportunity for either the company or the interveners or the public to testify. This is for us to discuss the case. But like I say, we do these discussions publicly. So that is why we're here. It'll be broadcast and it will be recorded. That's all I would have for opening comments. Commissioner Haugen-Hoffert, did you have any comments that you wanted to make before we really kick off?
No, I think you summarized it up very well, what's going to happen here.
Thank you. And Mr. Dawson?
No comments.
Okay. Kind of just turn over the lead for getting us on topics, and we'll discuss it to our staff, our public utility director, Victor Shook, and our legal counsel, Zach Bellum.
Sure. So I think Zach and I will kind of tag team a few of these topics here as we go through, and we thought we'd kind of start off with some of the things that are more legal based and easier to kind of work ourselves through, and we'll get on to the more fun stuff as we go. So one of the topics that came up a number of times in the hearing process was foreign investment or foreign ownership of the of the line. Just kind of wanted to clarify what our jurisdiction would be on something like that, or lack thereof, maybe is a better way to think about it. I guess I'd probably prefer to have Zach speak to that. He's a little better versed.
Thanks, Victor. That topic came up a few times, and the short answer is the commission doesn't have any jurisdiction over it. There's statutes that govern public private ownership. It's Century Code 47-01-09.
I didn't write fast enough. Would you say that again,
yeah,
please?
47-01-09.
Okay.
And that statute talks about foreign business entity, defining foreign adversary, more than 50% of total controlling interest, And it's also talking about ownership of land here. And the subpart three says, when requested by a city council or commission, county commission, or title agent or company, the attorney general shall complete a civil review to the extent allowable by law relating to the qualifications of any foreign adversary business entity acquiring real property under subdivision C of subsection 2. So it's quite clear that there would be no ability for the commission to do any investigation at all related to potential ownership of a potential ownership of land by a foreign adversary. There isn't anything in the Century Code pertaining to the Public Service Commission that gives it any jurisdiction over making any determinations over land or who can own land for purposes of what we're here for, which is the siting of a pipeline specifically. That really is, I think, the answer. You know, there's corporate farming laws, enforcement under 47-10.1-04, which I don't know that specifically has come up, but if it did, again, that's outside the jurisdiction of the commission and would be within the purview of the Attorney General's office as well.
Who did you say are the entities that could request the AG's opinion?
The statute provides, Commissioner, that it's when requested by a city council or commission, county commission, title agent, or company. So it would be a city council or city commission, a county commission, title agent, or company. When requested. Doesn't say it has to be requested. I would interpret the statute to mean that they can.
Okay. Did anyone, I mean, that is a topic that as you said, Zach, came up a couple of times. Did anyone have any other questions on that? And someone was waving. I'm not ignoring you, and I'm not seeing you. This is just limited to our discussion.
Sure. It's 47-01-09.
Mr. Dawson?
Mr. Pelham, does that relate only to the purchase of property?
No, I mean, it would be the ownership of it. So, I mean, in purchasing it, the statute talks about there's a period of time that there would have to be selling of the property if it's determined by after review that it meets the stated qualifications in the statute. But again, that wouldn't be anything that the commission would have any ability to do. Nor would I advise the commission to do that because it's outside of your purview and outside of your jurisdiction.
Thank you for explaining that. That kind of follows along with what my understanding of that legislation did in the past, but I appreciate you digging into it and clarifying for those folks that have brought it up along the way from the public. What else you got for us?
So the next one on my list would be road use agreements. This kind of comes in under section 49-22.1-13. We spent a fair bit of time in this section talking about ordinances, but this section also spells out under subsection 2C, before a gas or liquid transmission facility is approved, the commission shall require the applicant to comply with the road use agreements of the impacted political subdivision. A permit may supersede or preempt those requirements if the applicant shows that the regulations or ordinances are unreasonably restrictive. On road use agreements specifically, we haven't been asked to make such a determination. So I would say this would be a standard case for us on as far as road use agreements. We haven't been asked to supersede them. We have not necessarily been had any filed with us. So as part of, if we were to issue an order, the order would likely reference that they must follow those road use agreements unless there's a request to make a determination that they are unreasonably restrictive.
I'm going to have you repeat the mm-hmm. century code again, because I know people are taking notes.
Sure. It is under section 49-22.1-13, subsection 2, and item number C within that subsection.
And for the very same reason, because that was a good point, one of the things that I think people can tend to do, because I've done it on other cases, you know, when there's a section where something is put in there, and so like in this case, there's 49.22, and then there's 49.22.1. In reading through that, it can be very easy to jump onto that 49.22. That's about electric. 22.1 is about pipelines. And so very important to make sure that it's that 49.22.1.13.
Absolutely agree. That's a very important distinction, because...
Because on this topic, then even the laws are quite a bit different.
Yes, on many topics, quite honestly.
And so, despite the previous decision that our decision on a pipeline project based on the things that the law has us considering supersedes the county ordinances, the road use agreements are kind of separate. We don't necessarily supersede county road use agreements. It would only be if they're deemed unreasonable.
Correct. It would require a separate finding. By default, we do not automatically supersede or preempt road use agreements.
And did I also understand it correctly? None have been filed, though.
Correct.
Okay.
And I just feel that that's the distinction, is because there has been no filing for us to look at, you know, it's... point, I mean, for us to look at.
Certainly.
Yep. I agree.
Okay.
I'm good on that topic.
Yeah, I'm going to go to another one that's, it's a different topic, but it's kind of related to the same difference between the Electrical and the Pipeline Siting Act, mitigation payments. I don't recall how many times that came up during the hearing. I don't think it was very many, but there does exist a provision under the electric siting that would permit environmental mitigation payments, mitigating environmental impacts. This is under the electrical section of 49.22-09.2.
You need to repeat that. Slow down. I'm just going to say.
Will do. So chapter 49-22-09.2. And there's a few other sections in there that also touch on this subject. But again, that is for electrical siting. If you kind of look over at the pipeline siting, which is chapter 49-22.1, as we said before, there is no such section talking about mitigation payments. So that would not be applicable for this proceeding.
And that's a relatively new addition to the law that kind of developed in response to wind farms in particular, more so than electric transmission lines, as I recall, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. But no application here. That language does not exist in the 49.22.1.
Correct.
Okay. Anything else on that?
Pictures. Okay, so the next thing I have would be unfair easement acquisition tactics. So this is, and I'll say it twice, Chapter 49-22.1-14. Chapter 49-22.1-14 speaks specifically to unfair tactics in acquiring land or easements for a facility. And I don't know that you all necessarily want me to read it out loud, but if there's particular sections you'd like highlighted, I know there was a number of suggestions made during the public testimony of maybe they didn't use those exact words, but that was the implication. 49-22.1-14. But just to kind of highlight some of the how this section of the law is structured, if at least five landowners aggrieved by the conduct of a person or persons acting on behalf of the same utility, acquiring easements for a site or route of a facility, allege use of harassment, threat, intimidation, misrepresentation, deception, fraud, or other unfair tactics by the person or persons acquiring or attempting to acquire the easement, an action may be brought to the appropriate district court.
And so, because we've heard so much of this, I had actually, this was one of the ones that I had asked you to bring forward as a topic today. Thank you. And so something in here that jumped out at me, and I'm especially looking at Zach if I'm misinterpreting. So the way this is written, I think, really attempts to treat landowners fairly. It requires five aggrieved landowners, but if it mentions if the conduct of a person or persons on behalf of the utility. So you could have a couple that dealt with one agent and a couple that dealt with another agent, and you know, across the whole state, it just takes five that feel they were harassed, threatened, intimidated, misrepresented, deceived, fraud, or unfair tactics. It covers, it seems like, just about everything we've been hearing about all along that is supposedly happening, and there's a process for it. And so they would go to district court then, and that is who would make a decision on whether those things actually, whether the activities actually met that level, correct?
That's correct, Commissioner. It would be a formal action that would have to be brought to the district court, file with the district court, making allegations, setting forth, likely in a complaint, with the legal pleading, and you know, following the statute, there would have to be five to do that, and then the court would decide. The commission, to be clear, would not have any jurisdiction or input, would not be a party to the action if it were brought in district court, and the commission does not have any ability itself to bring an action. So it would be outside of the jurisdiction of the commission to make any determination of any of the stated unfair tactics that are listed in subsection one of this statute.
And so then if the court determines that the landowners are right, the court can declare the easements void and award costs and reasonable attorney fees, correct?
Right. That's subsections 4 and 5 of the statute that provides, upon a determination by the court that the utility involved did knowingly allow, encourage, or operate an active consort or participation with a person utilizing an unfair tactic, the court shall cause a copy of its memorandum opinion or order to be filed with the commission. That's sub 4. Sub 5 is then, upon receiving a copy of a memorandum opinion issued by a district court, The commission may revoke or suspend the permit issued with respect to the route affecting the aggrieved landowners.
Yeah. And then I think up in subsection three above that is where they would declare the court would declare the easements void if they had acquired them unfairly.
That's what it says. And again, I mean, to be clear, the commission doesn't have jurisdiction over easement negotiations and such, but that is something that the court could do. And I think the important point is the court can do, not the commission can do.
So is this a relatively new law, do you know, or it just seems like, you know, over the years we've had cases with power lines or pipelines or whatever, and, you know, an individual comes and complains about the easement acquisition process. I don't recall ever having anything even close to this with so many. So, and actually, I don't know that every intervener has some people who have made these types of complaints, but there are a lot of these people are represented by counsel. So why is this so new that council doesn't know of this law, or do you have any idea why they're coming to us when it's just beyond our jurisdiction?
That's a great question. I don't know. You know, it's this particular statute, it indicates is effective July 1, 2017. I don't know whether or not there was some similar form to that prior to that, but this particular statute that we're talking about was enacted in 2017, and it's in the Century Code, so it's available. And throughout my practice, there's always a statute that seems to pop out and say, "Well, I didn't know about that," but at the same time, it's the obligation of the party or the individual or the attorney to know the law. And it's we're talking about it here today. It's been talked about it at prior hearings. But again, going back to my earlier point to emphasize, this is available, it's in the Century Code, but it's not something that the commission has the ability to do, to bring an action to the district court or to say to someone, oh, well, you know, not that we couldn't point this out if someone were to ask. And I think if someone, you know, I won't speak for Victor too much, but he can correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure if someone were to ask Victor a question or ask staff a question about this, they very well may say, well, we can't give you legal advice, but here's the Century Code and here's a provision. And what they do with that after that is up to that person.
Well, I hope that today maybe serves to provide that response. You know, it's our hearings would last forever if we sat and went back and forth with all the public that comes and testifies. And I know my colleagues share my sentiment. I mean, I take a lot of pride in trying to be responsive to people, but when the Century Code assigns responsibility elsewhere, I don't know what to do about it except for hear their complaint and move forward and let them choose whether or not they want to take it to the right jurisdiction to solve it under the law. But so there's no gray area that you're seeing. I mean, I read it. It seems very clear. It's like a half a page Well, it seems like that is the solution for people, correct?
Yeah, it is. And I mean, if you really think about it, it makes sense for a court to be making this determination on such an allegation. Because one, it's a very serious allegation. And I think the legislature has recognized how serious it is, because it's not just one person that is allegedly aggrieved, it's five. And they're all swearing out on a complaint to a district court saying this happened. And then a court is going to review whether or not they're entitled to a jury trial or not. I think that they maybe even be, you know, arguably be entitled to a jury trial on it. That's not clear. The statute doesn't speak to that, but ordinarily in the rules of civil procedure and in a litigated contested matter, you know, North Dakotans have the right to a jury trial. And it may even be that there is that right in this particular statute. But again, going back to my original comment, this is an area that the commission does not have the jurisdiction to make a determination on. That's not, I want to be clear too, it's not to suggest that allegations or statements of this type of behavior aren't appropriate for the commission to hear. It's just that the commission doesn't have the jurisdiction or the ability under the Century Code to make a determination to say these easements are struck down because there was unfair practices. Only a court can do that.
Zach, I appreciate the first part of it being very clear that these identified tactics are not in our jurisdiction. I think they did come before us in public opinion, but I just want to be clear that we're going to continue on the adjudication of this siting case. So that would be separate. That's not in our jurisdiction. And if, let's just play it out. If it was approved, I want to go through the last part, number five.
Mm-hmm.
About what happens there. I just want to be clear on how it does come back to the commission.
Yeah, I mean, under that hypothetical, commissioner, it would be after adjudication of presumably a contested matter at a court, and just under the hypothetical, it would be a determination that there was unfair practices in acquiring the land or an easement, in this case, probably an easement, but I guess it could be land. The commission may revoke or suspend the permit issued with respect to the route affecting the aggrieved landowner. I take that to mean that would be that specific area, not necessarily the whole.
Would it have to be the people who filed the complaint?
Yes.
But not the whole.
It would be the people who filed the complaint, because the statute is clear that it would be only to that portion. Those five would presumably, and again, we're talking hypothetical, so I want to, you know, to be clear on that. Obviously, the circumstances are going to be what would be what they would under that hypothetical. But as I understand the hypothetical, commissioner, it would be limited to the specifics of the order. Presumably, the order would only revoke easements of people who succeeded on their claims. Now, I suppose, again, hypothetically, a judge could say, or a jury could determine that, well, these three proved their case, but these two didn't. And then the order would be appropriate, or only one of the five, or, you know, it could be something along those lines. So, I mean, I think that the statute and courts are good at interpreting statutes. And reviewing courts are good at determining whether or not the trial court got it right or not. So there potentially could even be an appeal of a decision before it would come back to the commission. And, you know, again, that's another hypothetical.
I just wanted to be clear. That's how I read it. It's very clear. It's only those landowners, if they file a complaint and succeed.
Well, you can't expect a lawyer to give you a succinct answer, though, Commissioner, you know that. There's always many possibilities, which is why a lot of times people don't appreciate that of us lawyers.
Dawson, do you have any questions on that part?
Okay.
Let's see if we can take one more.
All right.
Move along pretty quickly.
Yeah, these have been going very well. The other one I was hoping to talk about is insurance. We received numerous insurance concerns as the hearing process developed. Some of them more generic, some of them more specific. And I guess, you know, there's different types of insurance that can exist for something, pretty much any pipeline or power line, anything else that crosses someone's property. The most of the concerns seem to be about a landowner being unable to get liability insurance if there is a release from the potential pipeline on their property. The way I would characterize that is it wouldn't be their responsibility. So if there is a leak or release or whatever the case may be of that pipeline, not due to a landowner's fault, it would be the responsibility of the company for that release. The other situation would be if a landowner intentionally would damage the line, either intentionally, I guess, depending on how the indemnification language is on the easement. If it is intentional, potentially if it is accidental, there could be some liability there on the behalf of the landowner as well. So the first instance I spoke about, if it is a release that is not due to the landowner or someone else on the property, but actually the operator of the pipeline, there would be no responsibility of any landowner. The liability would go to the owner of that pipeline.
Okay, sorry. I would say it was my understanding we reviewed that even in the first hearing, and Summit Carbon Solution accepted full responsibility if it's their liability, if it's a defect or something on them, that they have concluded that they will take full responsibility.
Yep. I would agree with that characterization.
Yep.
Was there something in their application too where they went on record that they're going to maintain insurance, correct?
Yep. In their application, I believe it was, let me pull it, I tabbed it in here, one sec. Page 44 of their original application, under section 7.3, there is a they're kind of speaking to the continued costs and of operation of the line, and they had referenced the continued cost of maintenance and operation of the pipeline facility includes insurance, right of way maintenance expenses, SCADA, engineering maintenance, and regulatory compliance. So there's not an amount necessarily listed as far as what the insurance liability insurance would be, but there is certainly a reference to the company would intend to have insurance.
Can we get that amount?
We can request.
I think we should get that amount to see if it's to review as far as adequacy.
I'm not sure what standards we use to determine adequacy.
Well, is there?
Well, I guess, you know, historically in our siting cases, I don't recall the topic of insurance coming up. Certainly, we don't have anything within Century Code or our rules that would govern what level of liability insurance we would deem as necessary. So either what we've come up with rules or what the legislature has given to us as direction or guidance within the law, there's not a reference to insurance. So I'm not sure, I guess, how we would.
Well, and I'm exploring that.
Sure,
as far
sure.
As this is something new and we have no baseline, you know, I'm just, what is adequate? I think you said, I mean, I don't know. So I need some, I maybe look to some guidance out there. What are other states doing? I mean, I don't know.
We'll certainly ask the company the question, and the following isn't necessarily an answer, I don't think, to your question, but it may be helpful. If any company that is operating a pipeline or transmission line in the state of North Dakota, and there is some type of event causes damage, one, it's in their interests to take care of it, because to maintain the operations of whatever facility is it's necessary. And two, they have legal obligations to the landowners through contract. You know, there's presumably an easement in place. If there's not, there's a problem, right? So the easement provisions would provide for, you know, taking care of whatever damages. And I mean, we think of, it's outside of the commission's jurisdiction, but, you know, you have an industrial commission permits saltwater pipelines, for example, and there's a leak in a saltwater line in oil country or something like that, and it causes millions and millions of dollars of damage, and there's requirements for mitigation. Those are all contractual between the landowner and the pipeline operator. Similar here would be a similar case. So in terms of insurance, ensuring that if there is an event that causes damage, it's in one, it's in the, my overall point, and it's somewhat subjective, maybe not objective, but the overall point is it's in the company's interest to ensure that it has adequate insurance to maintain the operations. And again, going back to my original point when I started to answer the question, it's a valid question to ask, and I think we should. But as far as the amount goes, I'm not aware of, I would agree with Victor, I'm not aware of any specific amount. But quite frankly, you know, I see a lot of contracts in my line of work, and there's a specific amount. Sometimes not any specific amount is necessarily going to cover an event. And it may go to the excess coverage, you know, from the primary insurance. And then if it goes past the primary, then there's the umbrella or excess carrier that would go into that to flow into that. But presumably, the company has looked at that, and we can ask them, and they're here today listening to this conversation, and get back to you at the next work session.
Okay, thanks.
One thing I want to be cautious of, because if we compare it to other states, everybody's siting laws will be different. Like, I know some states, the utility commission decides whether the company has eminent domain authority. In North Dakota, we don't. And so if a state somewhere else set a certain level of insurance requirement, it may be that their statute says like X number of dollars per mile if you have a pipeline of a certain size or something like that, which I, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know of anything where our legislature has given us any guidelines for what is adequate here. So I don't know that another state's insurance requirement necessarily carries over to our ability to enforce an order like that.
I guess I would agree that there is no guidance we've been given, but
interesting question though.
Certainly.
Ultimately, the liability would be on the company if there is an event, short of an intentional act. That much is clear.
I don't think there's any disagreement with that.
Right.
I just think, what is adequate? We don't even know. Yeah. So let's just explore this a little bit more and bring it back to the next work session.
I'll do that.
That can be you guys' homework assignment.
We shall become insurance experts. The intro.
I would regret not mentioning 811, though, because you have these three different sections here. You have the easement, and then it kind of stops. Then we have the siting that we do, and then we have the operation that goes into the future. And if you call up 811 before you dig, that statute is pretty clear that if it's marked and you dig outside the marks, you're safe.
I personally appreciate you bringing in 811.
So do I, as portfolio holder.
Yes. I will say Sherry and our staff do some tremendous work on the enforcement side of that.
So that's all I had on my list of items or that I was hoping to go through today. There's certainly other things for us to kind of work through.
A lot. And I know a couple of things you had asked me about, and I said I needed a little more time to prepare before we got to those. But
yeah. And I...
So you'll need a little time to do this last one. And was there anything else that we kind of left open? I think the first four were pretty well explained and no lingering questions, right?
That is how I
You talked about mitigation payments, right?
Yes.
That and the because it went pretty quick, it kind of blended in, but it's exclusively in the electric side.
Yep,
that law never got added to the siting or to the pipeline side. So you can gather a little more information on insurance, and do you think in a week or something we'd have some more topics ready? I'll be able to focus in on a couple of the ones that I had some questions on.
Yes, we can gather the more detail on insurance. Hopefully we'll get a filing from the company on what their intentions are, and we'll have some more data to discuss along with other topics as well, obviously.
Sorry, I'll wait till I'm by the mic. Did you look ahead at the parts of schedules that you have access to? Do you have any proposed dates for a subsequent meeting?
I do. The next day that looked available in calendars appeared to be 1 week from today, Monday, September 16th. And I know we all have a number of things going on that day, but it appeared to me that there was an opening potentially at about 9:30 a.m.
That one would work for me, not any significant amount later, but a 9:30 meeting would work.
Yep. Works for me.
Works for me.
Okay.
And Zach?
That works as well.
Sounds like that works for Zach. I do know, you know, we try to get these larger rooms available for these work sessions because they're a little better attended than most other things that we do at the commission. I know this room is not available next week, Monday, but the Brunhild Hugland room is. So if that time ends up being when we schedule this, we would move over to that room for that.
Well, if it's, I mean, scheduling is one of the toughest parts of getting things put together with everybody's schedules. So if everybody's in agreement now, that's only a week away. And you said you checked and that room is open?
Yes.
Okay.
And there is, I will say, at this time, you know, the legislature is kind of doing their pre-gaming, for lack of a better term. And on occasion, you know, they essentially take precedence over anybody else who books these rooms. So On rare occasions, something is booked and it gets bumped because the legislature is doing something. So I'll just kind of throw that out there in case we end up moving it for some reason. But at the time we checked, that room was available next week, Monday.
Well, if we get bumped, we bump. We get bumped. That's just the reality. I guess I'm just grateful that they're gracious enough to let us use these rooms when they're not. It is much wiser than the state having a whole bunch of meeting rooms is just set empty all the time. So, but to be clear for people who are listening or watching the broadcast, so that will be in the Brynhild Haugland room, you said, right?
Correct.
And so that is on almost the way west portion of the Capitol, in that legislative wing, on this floor, on the south side of the hallway, just a little bit before that west entrance and exit. It's actually right underneath the House chamber.
Correct.
Okay. Anything else before we wrap up this work session?
Nothing for me.
Nothing for me.
Just briefly, if you didn't see, there was a letter sent by Summit's counsel that was filed shortly before the work session today, relating to easement acquisition and survey completion. So if you didn't see that yet, take a look.
Is it anything that we need to discuss? Because I was only working on another project. Yeah. I did not see it, but it's nothing that applies to what we've discussed today.
Nothing as specific as to what we applied, but if there was a question or someone had to have a question, it might be easy just to say, hey, we have a question that we could ask the company for the next work session, work ahead a little bit. It's the only reason I mentioned it right now.
I'll have to wait. I don't know if you two got a chance to review that or not. But
no, I think there was actually one that came in last Friday too. So we have two from them, one today and one last week. I think there was two letters.
The one last Friday, Commissioner, was relating to cultural resources, yep. Just a redacted filing of that. So, yep. But yes.
With that, we are concluded. Thank you, everyone.